The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Very excited to be here today. Rod will be joining me in just a few minutes, and I have a great outline of topics to go through today. But before we get to all of that, let's do a little news of the week, brought to you, of course, by Steve's Roofing. Do what I did, call them, man. They have a great crew of people. They come out, put your roof on, tear off the old one, in and out within a day and a half or so. Give them a call. Look them up on Facebook as well. Also, the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 323-8300. And finally, my friend Dirk Bland of Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction place, offering the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at, you guessed it, KennyBlandAuctions.com. All right, so here we set, right? Even though 35% of the stocks in the S&P 500 are down at least 20% year-to-date through the end of July, the overall index is actually up 2.4%. I can't believe I'm even saying that based on what we've been through in the past. That's why I keep saying we've been given a gift of recovery. Now what do you do about that? An estimated 55% of working-age households today are not saving enough money before retirement to allow them to maintain their current standard of living into the retirement years. I was with a guy today going through his plan, and he was just absolutely bent on trying to get to $2 million, which is fine. I mean, that's fantastic. But he only needed what he had now to achieve what he wanted to achieve. So we started talking about how we should be investing the money. So we really got into the weeds on a four-year retirement plan, meaning 4 years out before retirement, certainly not a four-year retirement plan. That would be pretty morbid. We looked at it and said, hey, man, based on what you're saving in a very reasonable and low interest rate, you're there. So the risk you need to take is pretty small, but there's just something in him that made him want to put the pedal down and save more and keep the risk on. So you know what I mean? I can lead a horse to water, but you can't get him to drink all the time. Please vote, okay? Last presidential election, there were 138 million Americans that voted in the 2016 election. That's 58.1% of the nation's voting eligible population. 100 million voting eligible Americans did not vote in the 2016 race. My son will be there. He's a first timer, and I remember my first time getting to vote. And it's a rite of passage. That's why I'm really not a big fan of like mail-in voting. I understand absentee, but you know what, man? Get in line, show your ID. That's fun. That's a good process to go through. My son will be hanging in there with everyone else. And of course, he has his own opinions, which is fine. And we let that roll at our household. Okay, lastly, pensions see the best return in 22 years. Yes, public pension funds set a 22-year performance record in the second quarter, recovering some, but not all of their losses from the first quarter. Double-digit stock market gains push pension returns to an average of 11.1% for the second quarter. Wow. But even though with the rebound, the median annual returns for the public pensions, whose fiscal year ended June 30th, was 3.2%. Far, far short of the funds, the long-term investment returns target around 7%. And what's funny is I read this article from the Wall Street Journal, and he says, the person quoted here says, that's the funny thing about math. If you go down 20%, it takes more than a 20% return to make it all up. Where have you heard that one before? All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back. Rod will be joining us. This is Your Money with David Hayes. We'll be right back. My wife's actually in Florida, and I'm sure she is enjoying the beach right now and sunshine. I'll tell you what, I was on Lake Monroe last night, Wednesday night, and it was spectacular. There was only a few boats out there. We were slinging the rods around, having a great time. And speaking of rods, we got Hot Rod on the phone. And Rod, I look at last week, and then I look at this week, and last week I take a peek and say, you know, things were pretty mixed. It was a busy week of earnings. We had some troubling economic data that came out, and seemingly little progress on a new stimulus package out of Washington. My hopes are not high there. Something will happen, but who knows? But the market rode a pretty wild roller coaster ride last week, and then it reacted to a conflicting stream of corporate events and economic data. But the optimism on Monday about the ability of these mega cap tech companies to thrive in the uncertain economy turned a little bit of worry about pending congressional testimony involving the CEOs of those firms. And then on the economic front, the strong June, that's good for durable goods orders. And then Monday bolstered people's sentiment that day, but then optimism went away on a disappointing jobless claims number and troubling second quarter GDP that, while you and I both said this, while fully anticipated, was a little bit unsettling. And that's exactly how the week rolled. And here we are, a new week, a new day, and you never know. We were talking, yesterday, I think, that it seems so now virus, treatment-driven this week.
Yeah, it most certainly has. And that news has continued to be somewhat positive, even from the standpoint in which we had a lot of spikes that had been going on and hot spots, yet a bit of a delay before it actually kind of showed up in hospitalizations and some deaths. But those numbers on a chart also are beginning to roll over. So in addition to continuing to have positive news in the treatment and the vaccine front, we also seem to be peaking again and rolling over a little bit in some of those hot spot areas that were starting to look really bad and scare people. So the numbers continue to go up from a virus perspective, but obviously what we're most concerned about with the virus, because the virus is going to spread, is the hospitalization numbers and then obviously the deaths as well. And those seem to be coming down and taking a turn for the right direction. The market itself just continues to plug forward. We poked our head above 11,000 yesterday. We have put on the NASDAQ. We poked our head above 11,000 again today. We'll have to wait and see until the market closes at the end of the day whether or not we can actually close above that number. But we have had 31 record closes so far this year on the NASDAQ. NASDAQ is up 22% through yesterday's close year to date. The S&P is even positive now through yesterday's close. It's positive about 3%. And second quarter earnings, which we're still smack dab in the middle of, are coming in considerably better than what the estimates were. Now, granted, most of these estimates are dramatically depressed estimates. So we're not coming in better than high expectations other than certain sectors and certain individual companies. But for the most part, as a whole, even some of the companies that are smack dab in the middle of the worst part of the virus from the standpoint of their business, that travel and leisure areas is a lot of what I'm talking about. Even their numbers aren't coming in quite as ugly as what the estimates had planned for them to be.
Well, you and I talked about this early on in this whole pandemic market that we've found ourselves in the middle of, that second quarter is going to be really, really ugly. And we all knew it would be ugly. But then when that number hit, it's like, ooh, it really is ugly. And they had a reaction. But like you said, I mean, the market has a very short memory. And here we said. And, you know, we've talked about the weekend at Bernie's market, you know, a few companies kind of carrying around a dead market. I was actually doing some stats on that earlier. And they're still 35% of stocks in the S&P are still down 20% year to date, even though the index overall is up 2.5-ish or so. But like you've mentioned, there's a hint when we've talked about this behind the scenes that this Weekend at Bernie's idea, and if you're not familiar with the movie Weekend at Bernie's, take one of your free evenings and watch it, and you'll know what I'm talking about. But it's basically a dead guy. They stick sunglasses on him, and to pretend like nothing's really wrong, they carry him around all these parties and different things like that. So you have these big mega cap companies that seem to be the guys, and then a lot of the market continues to be dead, and they're dragging us around. But we saw a little bit of rotation this week, I believe.
Yeah, we have, and you've seen some profit taking, even as some of these, especially tech-oriented companies that had spectacular earnings and in many cases beat high expectations, they have kind of sold off. And we've seen this multiple times throughout this cycle in which the companies that are benefiting from the environment we're in, of the stay at home, the work at home environment, you get these huge runs and then you get some profit taking, but those dollars aren't fully leaving the equity market. They're just rotating into the equity market, into the more beaten up sectors, the energy, the financials, the travel and leisure areas, and they go into them and you get a little bit of a pop, and then they kind of come out of there and then move back into the areas that are actually growing earnings and revenue, which is predominantly tech, but not tech exclusive. Healthcare has been fairly solid. Consumer discretionary in certain areas has been pretty solid as well. But yeah, the dollars, as we sell off, it really is a rotation more than it is taking money fully out of the equity market. It's just kind of leaving certain sectors and buying in other sectors.
Well, I mean, where are you going to go, right? With interest rates so low, I mean, that gives you kind of permission to stay in the equity markets, maybe clip a dividend or something like that. You know, you and I have talked so much about this over the years, but the economy is the economy. The market is the market. The market moves on expectations only to adjust on reality, but then only to move based on new expectations. And, you know, the market overall, in a selective manner, does seem to be reacting in a very positive way. But the reality of it is that the economy is still struggling. There's not a lot of jobs going back quickly. They're going to be laying a lot of people off permanently. A lot of companies are. So there is a disconnect a little bit between what they used to call Wall Street and Main Street. But, you know, I was fishing with a client last night. And he's a friend as well. And we're like, you know, for the most part, my life really hasn't changed that much. And there is a large segment of the population where things have not changed that much. I mean, they've slowed things down. I mean, even for myself, which I've kind of enjoyed it in a weird way, not having a conference to go to or a due diligence meeting or this or that. I'm always going here. Okay, Misty, I'll be gone Thursday. I haven't done any of that, which has given me an opportunity to do some things that I've really enjoyed. So I think a lot of it's just attitude. Rod, real quick before we let you go, the month of August has historically been a pretty volatile month. Like back in 19, we had, we had 1% moves, I believe, in 22 trading days in August. And one of the possible reasons that many traders go away on vacation, resulting in a light volume. We've always been told that. We don't know if that's really true, which might amplify market volatility. But this year, it's uncertain whether these traders will actually be away on vacation due to the pandemic. So whether volatility is hot in August or not is still to be seen. But that's just more of a comment and a statement than anything else. Are we starting to see volatility creep back in here in the early August days?
You know, honestly, we haven't. Volatility is actually fairly low. You're down at, as of today, the VIX is sitting at 22.7. That's a little bit higher than average. Average is more like in the upper teens, but far lower than what we got earlier, in which the VIX actually jumped all the way up to 85 in the peak of the selling. But to your point on the summer months, Dave, we'll address this a little bit with glass. July is typically the seventh worst month of the year, and it had one of the best months since 2013, up 4.65% for the month of July, and the average is 0.68%. August ranks as the ninth worst month, but so far we're off to a decent start. We're not screaming ahead because we already screamed ahead in July, but we are having positive progress moving forward. So yeah, you know, I think the days of the summer doldrums aren't what they used to be because of connectivity and the ability to basically trade from anywhere that a trader has access. So are they as focused on the market when they're on vacation in the summer? No, they aren't, but it doesn't mean that they don't have an idea of what's going on and can't still connect with that so-called junior trader that they left back at the desk in the home office and be able to give some instructions. Or like you said, they may not be taking the same types of vacations. So while they may be at home enjoying time with the family, they're probably still a little more engaged in what's going on in the market than maybe what they are in normal summers.
Well, I would say if they're taking a vacation, don't go to the UP of Michigan, because when I was there smallmouth fishing a few weeks ago, there's no internet service up there. So if you want to stay connected, don't go there. Although it's beautiful. Hey, last thing, because we kind of brought this up this week, you and I, the CBOE plan could curb advantages of fast traders. You know, we blame a lot of this volatility on the algorithms and the AI in the market that causes trades to happen really quickly. That I thought that was a pretty, I liked the article. I thought it was a great idea. What do you think about kind of curbing? Now, you don't have to eliminate it, but curb some of these fast trading algorithmic type of funds that we see out there.
Yeah, I think it makes some sense what they were talking about, and it has been implemented a little bit over on the London Exchange. But yeah, because I do believe that the algorithm trading has provided some added liquidity to the market, and liquidity is always very good in the marketplace. Always discussed that when things start to seize up and you lose liquidity, that's when things turn really, really ugly. But I also think that the computers have gotten so fast and they're trying to make pennies a thousand times over, if not a million times over, that it becomes a bit excessive, and it tends to drive the market in either direction further than what it deserves to go. So I think it does make sense to have some of that, but in a reduced capacity probably would not be a bad thing if they can get that to the point to where it's efficient and you don't lose efficiency within the market.
Rod Holloway, listen to him on Monday and Friday, bookends, a glass in the afternoon. He gives you a heads up on what's going to happen throughout the week and then books it at the end. So that would be tomorrow, Friday. So we'll hear you on Glass in the afternoon on Big Show Friday, Hot Rod.
That sounds good, David. Enjoy the rest of your show, and I will talk to you later.
All right, man. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, math, anxiety, and retirement. Really cool article that I read and was shared to me by someone on this whole concept, because we haven't been responsible for our own retirement for really that long when you take a peek at it. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, it's a bit patronizing to assume your employees, my employees, are too unsophisticated to understand how to invest their retirement money. But does this actually enable bad behavior? That's the question of the day. Think about it. If you're expected to make a mess of things, you don't really feel that bad when you make a mess of things, right? Lower expectations breed poorer results. If this sounds a little bit familiar, there was actually a study done years ago about teacher expectations and pupils in their classes, and it describes how a preconceived notion can lead to a self-fulfilling prophecy. So basically, a teacher has lower expectations for Joey, and therefore, when they have low outcomes, then they really don't get too jacked up about it. But math anxiety likely leads to financial illiteracy. I mean, financial illiteracy often leads to poor retirement savings habits. Like the burden is placed on the 401k sponsor or the company, and they're the ones that have to drive assumptions that employees will tend to make, you know, good decisions or bad decisions. But I think most people expect people to make bad decisions, because when it comes to, you know, emotions, besides family, money's the next most emotional thing. So like those teachers that perhaps have low expectations, that maybe the plan sponsors, maybe the employers have low expectations of their employees, and they're going to make bad decisions. And that's why I've been promoting financial literacy for so long to companies. So if you are an owner of a company, you know, I know you have a plan, and I know you have a website, and I know they have access to probably, you know, great funds and all of that, but that's for the people that are engaged. That's the people that are actually thinking about it, doing something about it. So I've been a big promoter of, let's take some of the math and anxiety out of this thing. Let's say, okay, when you sign up to be an employee of mine, you're automatically in the plan. And no, you're not automatically in at 3%. You're in at 10%. All right, you're going to have to do something to not have it at 10%. Oh, and by the way, every year I'm going to knock that up about, oh, whatever, 0.25%. So now I'm at 10.25, 10.5. Let, you know, maybe cap it out at 15 or something like that. You'd be amazed. Studies have shown that if you put automatic enrollment and you put it at an automatic amount, very few people make that change. And all of a sudden, when you finally start thinking about this, which, by the way, is not in your 30s and some not even in your 40s, but when you finally set back and say, oh, wow, I've actually got some money here. I'm not far behind. And that was my conversation with one of my clients this morning. He thought for sure he was like way far behind, because he'd been divorced once and, you know, felt like he got started late. But, you know, he was doing just fine. He wanted to have a certain amount of money each month in retirement, and he was on track perfectly to do that. Well, that actually lowered his anxiety, because what you don't know is what you fear the most. That's why we're so freaked out about this stupid virus thing, because we're all scared to death that someone's going to get it, and someone's going to give it to me, and so I'm going to give it to my mom, and, you know, and all this stuff happens. That's all fear, right? It's all fear. If you would just, you know, follow some basic rules like we have for years with the flu and other things, you're probably going to be okay. I was talking, I'm not going to get on a high horse or anything like this, but you get a little bit fearful of just things you don't know about. And that's why they call this thing a novel virus, right? We've never seen it before. Well, you've never retired before. And like I've told many people before, we've been doing this for 26 years. We've helped people prepare for and successfully retire for years. We do it every day. You do it once. And that's why you listening to this program gives me hope that, hey, you're engaged. But there's a bunch of people out there. In fact, earlier I said 55% of Americans do not have even close to enough money to have the same lifestyle that they had pre-retirement, in retirement. So you have to reach those people. And it's an engagement process. So we were talking with a big employer here locally about a process, from an onboarding process with financial literacy. We're going to sign you up. Here's what you have. Here's what we're going to do. To all the way through to an offboarding process. When you retire, what does this look like? How many years out should you start thinking about it? How do you rewire your mind? You know, a lot of people, you know, are good and glad and happy to get rid of that job. They've hated it and been miserable for years. But that's not the case with everyone. I hope most people aren't that way. If I was going to say, you know what, I'm going to leave the field of helping people make good decisions with their money, which is what I call it. It's not financial planning. It's not financial advising. It's kind of like a life's passion, as you guys surely have picked up on by now. But it's like, what else would I do? You know, I'm somewhat identified by this. I would need to have some kind of a mental offboarding process. You know, why do you work beyond the paycheck? That's a great question to start with. And I use that from Jerry Sadler's book, Don't Retire, But Rewire. But and sit back and think about that. And then think about, how did you get to where you are? You know, what was this journey like? And some of your stories are fantastic, and I know many of them. I think my story's good. And then you think, okay, how can I get that same fulfillment, same kind of attaboys, same this, same that, without a paycheck and without the identity of being this guy? So, you know, my dad and I, we talk about it a lot as we've been able to spend extra time together this last fall up until recently on different trips we've been on. You know, and I say, you know, Dad, can you, you know, travel when you want to travel? Yes. Can you relax when you want to relax? Yeah. Do you get to serve when you want to serve? Yep. I said, well, that's what I tell people is the key to a happy retirement. You're living the dream. So when you get to the point where you aren't identified and held to that position of influence or whatever it might be, then you'll know when it's time. It'll just kind of creep up on you and say, you know what? I think it's time. And my dad's not there yet, thankfully. And by the way, happy birthday, Dad. He's 73 on March 7th, and by golly, he's done it, which is crazy to think that my great-grandfather died at 71. My grandpa died in his 50s. My Uncle Paul died, you know, in his, I think, late 60s or early 70s. But my dad at 73, man, believe it or not, in the last four generations of Hayes's, he's the oldest living Hayes. So here I sit at 50. My brother Dan just turned 54. So I hope my dad blazes a path. And I really credit that to, you know, not just his lifestyle, his faith, but also to the fact that he's still working every day. And he's very relevant, you know. And we was on a BEDC meeting the other day as we put recommendations together for the mayor's policy, Recover Forward. And my dad was right there, you know, talking on the housing issues. And I'm like, dude, there he is. And here I am. It's so cool because, I mean, there I was with my picture, my name, and all that stuff. And there was my dad. And I'm like, that's awesome. So 73. Happy birthday, old man. I appreciate you very much. Love you like nobody else. And we're going to take a break on that. When we come back, let's see. I can't get over this, right? More tax-free. Just like last week, I'm going to keep hammering this topic home. We'll be back. It's Your Money, like David Hayes. You know, when we went to the break, I said, Your Money, like David Hayes. And it's just a little slip of the tongue, but if you caught that, you caught it. Then I got to thinking, yeah, I like that title. Not Your Money with David Hayes, but Your Money, like David Hayes. Wouldn't that be cool? I don't even know what that means. Anyway, I cracked myself up more than I should. Okay, but I also heard that the key to longevity was immaturity, which means I might live to 150. You never know. Have you ever heard about taking the bull by the horns? You probably have not heard about riding at the dog. And I think I might have shared this either on a video that I put out or maybe even on the radio. And that's my problem. I might repeat myself because I think you didn't hear it. But I know I said it to somebody else, but maybe you all heard it. I'm not sure. But when I was a little boy, my brother Mark and I would ride our bikes to the fair, and we lived out on Harmony Road, and we would ride to the top of the hill on Garrison Chapel Road, and there was this big, mean dog every day that would, I mean, bark and chase us and bite at our legs on our bicycles, but that was the only route we had. So we had no choice but to ride by that big old nasty dog. And my brother got pinned down one time in tears, and I had to throw rocks at him to get rid of this dog. Anyway, after about 3 days of being chased and pinned down and nipped by this dog, I told my brother, and I couldn't have been older than maybe 9 or 10 tops, so he would have been, you know, he's a year younger. I said, "Hey, Mark, when we get to the top of this hill, I'm going to pedal hard right at the dog. And now you ride by, and then he might turn and chase you, and then I can ride by. And once we crested the hill, we were fine. So we got to the top of the hill, and I rode my bike at that dog. I mean, hard. And I started barking at him, like, and pedaling as fast as I could. And guess what? That dog, he turned and ran. He was afraid of me. And we went by. So the next 3 days to the end of the fair, we'd ride at the dog. And I always tell people with anything, just ride at the dog. Don't run away from the dog. Ride at the dog. Well, I'm telling you right now, we have a real chance to ride at the dog when it comes to paying off our tax now and never pay it again in the future. And I was hearing someone talk about, well, what if Roth IRAs, which by the way, a Roth is you pay the tax now and you never pay it again. It grows tax-free. You don't have to take it out when the government wants you to take the money out of the other accounts. It's just a great place to be. So, you know, we developed a proprietary process called the ECC, Evaluate, Calculate, and Convert, because there is a lot of little gotchas when you create extra income at different ages and stages of life. It could affect your Social Security, it could affect your Medicare, it could affect your tax brackets, anything and everything could happen. So it's super easy, but it helps you understand how much you should convert now, how much you should convert next year, and the next year, and next year. You have basically 6 years. We have this year and five more to get money out of the crosshairs of higher taxes down the road. And I cannot press this enough to say, quit putting your money away tax deferred. I don't care. I mean, there might be some cases where it makes sense, but for everyone and most people listening, why would you do that? Why would you say to my dad at the bank, "Hey, Jerry, I need a loan." He says, "Sure. How much you want?" "A couple hundred grand." "Yeah, here it is." "Oh, Jerry, by the way, what's the interest rate?" "You know what? Right now it's this, but don't pay me anything back. Just wait until I need the money. And when the bank needs the money, I'll let you know what the rate is at that point." Who would sign up for that? That's what we've signed up for. We as Americans have been putting money away tax deferred for years, years and years and years, only to later pay it at a much higher tax rate when we take it out. And we've been told, and we were sold, you will be in a lower tax bracket down the road. You will not pay Social Security and Medicare tax. Those are payroll taxes, but you will pay federal and state income tax, and that's the only tax you're going to pay in retirement. And with $26 trillion of debt, and probably going to add another two or three before the end of this year, who doesn't understand that math, right? So do what you need to do to protect yourself, your family, right, and your future, and pay the tax now. Run at the dog. Run at the dog. Ride at the dog. Whatever it is, but run at this problem. Don't run away from it because it will bite you in the end. Enough said. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I think we have some questions of the week. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Why is it that I get so fired up when I talk about taxes? I mean, I do though. I do. Maybe it's just because it's so important, but I could talk about it every day, and you can hear the passion and conviction, and hopefully it's just somewhat inspiring to have you do the right thing. You know, part of my mission statement is to inspire the people we touch to do the right things financially, you know, for themselves, their families, and their businesses. You know, we want to educate and communicate, giving folks confidence in their decisions. You know, that is my mission, and it was 20 years ago when I wrote it, and it is today. And you know what, every time I read that mission statement, I think that's it. You know, we're still there. So, you know, I remember as a kid wanting to have money, you know, because I didn't have any. And then after I learned how you could make money and save money, I'm like, I need to teach other people about this. This made the big secret. And then that became my life's mission at an early age. You know, I was 20 years old when I started on this journey. And after college and working at a couple professional offices, because I wanted to be around professional people and learn how they act and what they do and whatever. I mean, that was my journey. So I was asked about, this is questions of the week. So someone said, okay, yeah, David. I mean, they're real skeptical, kind of a, you know, I was called my gold, guns, and ammunition people, which I love, by the way. But sometimes they think kind of crazy. The Roth, they say, well, what's, you know, I pay it now, and what happens if later on? They say, nope, you can't do that anymore. Well, I don't even think we can say this word anymore, I heard this week, which is, this again, a crazy word, but grandfathering is what I can tell you is common in almost 100% in the tax code. So if you had did something under the current tax law, that is move money from taxable to tax-free, and you paid the tax, you did your duty. Going forward, they could say no more Roth, but I'm going to tell you right now that in the budget proposal, I believe it was when Obama was in office, maybe Trump's first term, I forget, but they were trying to do away with tax deferral. And because the answer is why? Well, they need the money now. And that's why in some of the comments that I've made is when you do a Roth conversion, the IRS is going to thank you for it. Because they need the money bad now, or U.S. government needs it bad, and you're going to thank yourself later. So that's my answer on grandfathering. All right, my employer is offering an early out option. Yes, I know that's happening around. What I do about health insurance after 18 months, because 18 months you can go on COBRA, I'm going to have 4 months, I'll be short of Medicare. Yeah, so that's a great question. And it's not an easy one, but you can go currently to the marketplace, and that would be more than likely your best option to get some decent coverage. And at that point, I think there's only a couple carriers any longer. You know, just get everything you can possibly get done before that 18 months is over, and look at that 4 months as sort of your, you know, months where just don't get hurt, don't get too sick, you know, get to Medicare, because there is no pre-existing condition clause on Medicare. So that 4 months, if you want to extend your shutdown, maybe that's a good idea for 4 months. But yeah, there's insurance, but your best option would be to head to the marketplace. COVID-19 CARES Act, IRA. Okay, yeah. Great question. So anyway, if you've been affected by the COVID-19 in your job, laid off, furloughed, pay cuts, whatever, then you have an option of doing something under the CARES Act. You can take up to $100,000, and this came up this week, and I'll explain how this all happened. You can take $100,000 out of your 401k, regardless of your age. You do not pay a penalty, and you can evenly spread the tax liability over the next 3 years. Not bad. You also have up to 3 years to roll it back in as though it never happened. That's an extremely flexible thing. So here's what happened. Had a guy call me, hey, I'm going to put a barn, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. So how much you think you're going to need? I'm going to probably need about 70 grand. Thinking about taking it out of my 401k. What do you think? I'm like, yeah, that's not a bad idea based on where you are right now and your tax situation. But hey, think about this. Weren't you furloughed? Yeah, I was furloughed down to 4 days a week. Oh yeah, okay. Well then you qualify under the CARES Act for a COVID-19 based withdrawal. So go to your provider, do it, and then you have 3 years to pay the tax back, but you have to do it evenly over 3 years. Or if you want to, you could roll it back in. And that ended up being a really good idea for him. He wasn't that hurt or affected by it all, but the rules are the rules. I want to change my beneficiaries. What else do I need to do this? So really where this question led was, okay, I need to change my beneficiaries and my IRAs and all that, but what about Are they also your power of attorney? Yep. Are they your healthcare representative? Yep. Are they joint owners on anything? Yep. Well, if you're going to change your beneficiary because you're in the middle of a breakup, which that's the situation I was in, then, not I was in, but I was helping the person in, thankfully. Yes, my wife's in Florida for the week, but that is not an official breakup. That's just a vacation for her. You know, I've been going fishing a lot, different places. You know, I've been to the Gulf of Mexico and I've been to Michigan, and, you know, she hadn't done anything. So it's me and the dogs this week. And, you know, the one thing, Sunday afternoon, I helped captain a boat in the state fishing tournament at Lake Monroe. My boys, they were great kids. They caught 4 fish that day. We didn't have any to weigh in. My good friend John Albertson's daughter Jenna and her partner won the state tournament. But I was out there and I got home and went over to a friend's house for dinner. And I thought, man, I didn't realize how many responsibilities I have when my wife is gone. She does a lot more than I ever dreamed. And I mean, everything. I mean, the laundry basket is completely full. The dogs didn't eat last night until about 9:30 because I was out fishing. I'm interested, a lot goes on. The house, always, how does the house get messy when it's just you in the house? I don't know, but it's a wreck. Dog toys everywhere, you name it. But that's been my life this week. So I'm anxious to have my wife come back. But I showed up there on Sunday, and I'm like, man, I've got a lot of responsibilities to deal with that I never knew existed in my house. Well, anyway. All right, so let's see. What's the limit on... Yeah, so you want to change all that stuff. What's the limit on my Roth IRA? 6,000 if you're over 50 like me, then you can go up to 7,000. But the question was that I had, what about doing it for your kids? Yeah, you can do it for your kids. The kids have to have earned income, and they cannot put more in than what they earned. So if they earned $4,000 in the year, like my son earned about that, he could put $4,000 into a Roth IRA. The other thing, if you're a business owner, you can hire your kids. And I've been, you know, quote, hiring Will to do basically hardly anything since he was 13, I believe, putting money into a Roth IRA. Great idea. Last thing before we take a break, let me check my time. All right, so Medicare surtax, any way around it. So what happens, folks, a lot of times, you're working, and that last year you probably make the most money ever because you might have some paid time off, but you get paid for vacation time plus your regular salary, and you go into the next year, and now you're going to get retirement, whatever, and your income is high 2 years ago, and you go on Medicare. Well, then Medicare looks back and says, what was your income, and was it a certain level? If it was, then guess what? You're going to pay more Medicare B premiums. There is a way around it. There's a waiver that you can fill out and say, hey, you know, the reason I had more money then is because I was working then. Now I'm retired, and that's an automatic, you know, pass. And there's other excuses that you can get out of a Medicare surtax. So if you're listening and you're paying, you know, more for Medicare than your neighbor, there might be a way around it. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the big show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I actually am sitting in the studio right now, and I see a big stack of Herald Times here to the left, and I see Southside Duo NAB State Fishing Championship. That was in Wednesday's paper. I have not read that yet. I'm going to have to read that when I wrap up the big show. So that's cool. Yeah, I mean, right now the sports writers don't have much to write about, so they can, you know, if you have anything going on that's kind of cool related to sports. And I always say, what's a sport? A sport is something that if you work hard at, to get better at, then it's a sport. So fishing, I'm telling you right now, I know who won, I know who the boat captain was, and they know how to fish, period. They know how to, they just know things. You know, if you are in gymnastics, or you're in cheerleading, or racing, all that, those are sports. You know, I don't care what you say, if you work at something and you can get better at it, then it's a sport. Golf, right? Football, basketball, baseball, those are obvious ones, but you know, when you boil it down, and fishing certainly one of them. What else we got going on? I'm looking here at, 3 or 4 things that we're going to talk about in the upcoming weeks. So David McKnight, you guys know him as the author of Power of Zero. We've communicated this week. He's been on twice this year already? Yeah, I think twice. He's going to come back on. He has a new book out, A Tax-Free Retirement, which is kind of interesting because his book and my book are very, very similar. And what's also funny is that you know, he has stories that he tells. I have stories that I tell, but they're all kind of the same story. And we didn't make that. I mean, I didn't call Dave and said, "Hey, Dave, you know, write about running at the dog when you were 10 years old, riding at the dog." He has the Wile E. Coyote story. You know, that's his story. And yeah, but he's going to come on, and his topics that he's covering in his book, from taxes to sequence of return risk to longevity risk, he's pretty well laying it out as well. We're just telling the story a little bit differently. So we're going to have David on to talk about what he's been up to. He's still in Puerto Rico, has not been doing a lot of live events at all, actually zero live events. And yeah, he's been hunkered down trying to get this book done, and I can't say I'm any different. I've been working every week trying to work my magic to finish up 2025, the final drive, which of course is a metaphor of my football playing days, but it also indicates that time is of the essence. We have an urgency in front of us, and we know, well, and here's the other thing. If we have a flip in the White House and we have a flip in the Senate, this tax law could go away sooner than that. It's unlikely because of the sunset provision already in place, but it could. So you might be looking at like this year and next year possibly. I don't think so, but that's, you know, it's possible. But one thing I was going to tell Rod, and we hadn't talked about this, when the market forecast expectations in the 2016 election, it forecasted that Hillary Clinton would win the president's the office of the president. When President Trump was elected, what happened? The market went down in the beginning because the market hates uncertainty. Well, right now, from the people that I talk to, the market is pricing in no change. So even though you hear the media reports and you hear this and hear that, I'm just telling you what I told you back in 16, which was, you know what, he could win, because anywhere I've been around the country, there was a real movement to, I'm not going to vote for her. I don't like him either, but I'm not going to vote for her. And I haven't been anywhere besides just my Zoom calls to give you any indication of that. But I do believe that the market is a very good indicator of what's to come. And 3 months out, it's certainly not pointing in a significant manner any major change. So we'll just spot this day, August 6th? Yeah. And we'll look back and see, you know, was the market right? I'm not, it's not my opinion. I'm just saying, is the market right or was the market wrong? And I think that will start to clear up a little bit as we get a little closer to the November elections. So watch that. Watch interest rates, watch the market. I mean, if it's just gets a little crazy, then that means that they're not sure or it's not sure. We talk about the market like it's a person. It's not, right? It's actually people behind making decisions that cause the market to react certain ways. So hope everyone has a great weekend. I don't know how the weather's going to be, but anyway, I've got a lot going on. I can't wait. So you have a great rest of the week and weekend, and we'll talk to you again next Thursday night. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.